Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. We got really busy and fell behind, so we are going to... This episode of Taz Talk is about both the setup episode and the first episode of Taz Dust. So, first of all, Captain Bane is back, and he's a werewolf now.
Basically.
Don't you think that voice is so similar? It's really fun to hear Griffin doing like a gruff guy voice again.
Gruffin, you might say.
We're off to a good start, folks. Chelsea on fire, coming at you.
I was actually thinking, it sounded like for a little bit, and it sounds like they're all kind of like finding their voices still, but I could have sworn I heard some Barry Blue Jeans up in there. Like, I definitely
oh, maybe that's
heard.
What I'm thinking of. Errol Blue Jeans.
Errol Blue Jeans. Barry Blue Jeans, the wolf boy. It's just... But I love it. I dig it. You know, also, it kind of reminded me also of Little Jerry.
It's basically every gruff character that Griffin has had to play
it's
over the course
of... his gruff boy
of...
voice, yes.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure where we want to start. I guess let's talk about our impression. I want to talk about some of my impressions that I had from the setup episode stuff that happened there, and then we can just like proceed into episode one.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
It sounds good.
Okay. Well, one thing that immediately struck me about this system, Urban Shadows, is that's what it's called, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that player versus player combat is like built into it, which is awesome because that's something that I've always been curious about in Dungeons and Dragons, but it never actually came up in play. Actually, that's not true. My character and another character in our party almost got into like a big fist fight in our last session at work. So that was kind of wild.
I can't even imagine.
Well, because it's like, if two characters disagree with each other, either they can work it out or you gotta fight. And I don't know, like there were times when, back when I was playing an evil campaign, we were all pretty evil, but then my one friend, it was Tim Chelsea, was like completely chaotic nightmare person. And there were a couple,
I remember this campaign, yeah.
Yeah, and there were definitely a couple of times where we were like, are we gonna have to kill Rosencrantz? And it was just like, I would have loved to see something like that happen. I think the idea of going after another player character is really interesting and potentially emotionally messy depending on how everyone's feeling, but
yeah I think and that's what kind of struck me about the kind of tone that Travis wanted to make with this arc is that he was very much like, you know, if you make jokes you might not receive the most positive response for it, so it definitely, like, he was trying to set a more serious tone for the entire game, and it was really fascinating just because we haven't really seen, you know, like, in the interest of, we have to make an entertaining podcast, I think the boys kind of lean on, and they're also having fun, like they all are very familiar with each other, and this is like a more stimulating creative way for them to establish their relationships and things, so I think they do lean a little bit more on the jokesy side of things. But it was interesting to see Travis, who's usually very like positive and really like enthusiastic about things, like buckle down and do a more serious kind of take on their gameplay.
That's something that I've also struggled with as a DM, which is like letting people goof off and just like totally joke with NPCs and stuff, because there's a balance you're trying to strike between letting people be silly and have fun and trying to maintain a sense of realism.
Yeah.
And like, the more one goes up, the more another goes down. And it was something that I think it depends on who your players are and what the DM wants to do. But yeah, it's hard to know, I think, how much, what the good balance is between those things. Yeah. And I personally thought balance struck a really good balance. Get it?
Uh-huh. I'm not the only one on fire.
I'm going to shamefully admit that I actually have that pun written in my notes.
Oh my God.
But they were definitely a lot sillier in the beginning when they were still, I think, trying to find the tone of the show.
Oh, definitely, yes. But even then, I think as they keep going along and doing these mini arcs and taking turns DMing, they're really coming into stride of, okay, what do we need to do to make sure that what we produce is listenable?
Yeah.
Like I thought it was really great that they established upfront, like, everything that we learn, we acknowledge that we take the time to share notes and everyone knows everything, just, you know, to save time and stuff. Or even how they included the what did Griffin call it? The homunculus flash drive. I thought that was
Yes,
hilarious.
those were so fun. I like those.
That was hilarious. But also, like, it served for, like, a good in-universe established way of saying, yes, it's not just a shortcut. Like, it works in universe, like, you know.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, but there.
Yeah, speaking of the
Yeah, go ahead.
homunculus,
Yeah, go ahead.
man, just listening to the setup episode, I was really excited for Clint's character.
Yes,
And I think,
Gandy.
like,
Oh.
I, yeah, and I think I like her a lot. I
Yes.
think she's really cute. And the whole, like, I mean, when he was first describing her, I was thinking, like, a wizard terrified of death. If this was D&D, she would be total lich material,
Oh, yeah.
which is so fascinating because liches are super cool. Love the haunted doll thing. All that's really fun. I love the way he made it like one of those Bunraku pup. Is that how you say that?
I'm not even gonna attempt to say it. Something I wanted to bring up in relation to this is that I appreciated Griffin's little, like, supplemental knowledge that he would include. Like, even it happened a couple times throughout the episode, but especially when they were talking about the Bunraku doll, like, we kind of established that Gandy has, like, some sort of Asian background. Because her parents worked on the railroads and they died working on the railroads, and there's a sort of theme going on with her character background, so this kind of goes along with it. But Griffin, instead of saying, oh, she's Asian, so she has this Asian thing, it's that she's a world traveler and she picked up, you know, she picks up things of the occult, things
Yeah,
that
that was
help her.
cool.
Yeah, I thought that was very thoughtful, which goes along with, you know, the more they keep doing this, the better and the more aware they are getting of how to do things. Like, it started kind of off, it kind of started off like a joke of, I'm gonna correct you so that nobody tweets at us, like, but, you know, but, like, in reality it is kind of helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One part that made me laugh really hard was when Clint was saying that Merle doesn't count as a magic user,
Oh
and
my
then I
gosh,
think
yeah.
Travis was just like, "It's nice to hear you say it,"
Oh
and
my
I
god.
was really good.
Okay, like, we'll talk about that offline, because Merle knew more than just one spell, I swear, but I do find that it was pretty funny that he was like, can I do a zone of truth? Like, is that a thing? Like, I
It's
just.
weird. Yeah, it's like looking back, I don't remember what Merle did in combat.
We'll take this offline, but I'm pretty sure he did stuff. Sometimes he would do stuff with little smusher. Sometimes he'd do stuff with the wrench.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, he did, like, at least
That's
three different
true.
things that weren't just Zone of Truth. Like, I'm pretty sure he did, like, healing word and other things sometimes.
I think that's true. That's
Yeah,
fair.
yeah. Did you
Yeah.
notice that everyone was rolling really well?
I
Like,
didn't.
mostly pretty well.
I think I'm still not used to the dice that they use. I
Oh,
like don't
yeah.
know. I don't know while I'm just like listening casually what a good roll is and
Yeah,
what a good
yeah.
like a bad roll is.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, the first roll that they did was when Errol was interviewing Dylan, the suspect in the murder mystery. He didn't roll. He rolled a mixed success. So, yeah, I liked that Travis took that to be like, well, you'll get, like, something, but it won't be like an easy something, you know, like, it won't be
Yeah, that
super
was
clear.
cool.
Yeah, like, and I think the more that we get to know the Powered by the Apocalypse system, like, we're getting a good taste of, like, how different DMs collaborate with their players. Again, like, we've talked about how we felt about, like, the Fate system and about Monster of the Week, and now we're into Urban Shadows. I think at this point, like, I'm pretty used to, okay, you got two dice. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you succeed less, sometimes you don't succeed, you know? And maybe it's just because it's more familiar now, but I'm, like, super into it. Like, I know I was
Yeah,
kind
it definitely like no, I definitely see the appeal.
Yeah, I was fussy about it, like, 3 months ago, but here we are.
I want to like get back to Urban Shadow's mechanics.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Because there's some other things that I thought were cool. Which was the corruption points. Ooh. The way that that works is really neat. And yes. Griffin's comment was on the nose about how like video games fuck this up all the time. How morality systems never have the consequences that they're supposed to. Definitely. To make players' actions like have a real effect other than inspiring some kind of internal guilt.
Did you ever play Sonic Adventures 2?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I fucking love that game. Are you kidding me? I love that game so much. The soundtrack to that game is burned so into good. My memory.
I know. I love it. The Chows. Okay, wait, hold on. That's a different podcast.
Yes, they're so cute. Oh my gosh. I love
them. Okay, so you know how there was the Sonic route and there was the Shadow route?
Yeah.
Like, video games, if they're going to try to introduce some kind of a dynamic or some kind of a, like, good guy or bad guy, they delineate those paths from the very beginning. You don't get to choose one way or another, and you don't get to influence the game as you go along. Like, mm-hmm. the path is already set for you. So I think that's what makes Urban Shadows really cool, is that as you go along, as you develop more of your character, like, the story is actively responding to the things that you're doing, which I think that's, I'm assuming, I'm hoping that that's what you meant as far as what you liked about it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. Yes. Okay, great.
And on the flip side, I really, really like the intimacy points system, which I don't think happened this first episode.
No,
did see a corruption point get taken, but there were no intimacy points. But what I love about it is that it basically rewards roleplay.
Yeah, which, it definitely does.
Man, Chelsea, if we had something like that in our campaign, can you imagine? Things would go buck wild.
I was about to say, like, I can imagine it because I can imagine exactly half of us being super into it and then the other half never actually using it.
Well, I think, do you think, like, more people would try to roleplay, even if it was bad or silly, if they knew there was a tangible reward?
I think, okay, yeah. I'm being kind of harsh on our group. If the reward were, like, very good and very tangible, maybe even perhaps game-changing, or even if it was, like, RNG in nature, mm-hmm. our boys, like, really love RNG. They're super into loot boxes. So even if it was, like, that, that actually might be a really good incentive.
I mean, like, I'm not going to lie, I love loot too.
But I also love roleplay.
But I also like flirting with NPCs.
Wait, hold on. Going back to like 3 topics ago, when we were talking about how Travis was saying, you know, if you joke with the NPCs, they might not respond to it kindly. They might even like kill you or something.
Yes.
I like that. When they tried to kind of make a joke, I don't even remember what the joke was. Oh, it was the ghost. It was Percival saying that there was a ghost behind the sheriff, and the sheriff being uh-huh. like, ugh, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I like that it came up again that Travis was like, you know, if you make a joke, not everyone's going to react favorably. But
yeah.
it wasn't just that the sheriff thought that was lame or anything, but it was because, like, his character was designed to react in that fashion. So
yeah, there was a real reason. I think it's really interesting because both this and Amnesty, and I guess to some extent Commitment too, have all been set in a much more realistic universe than Balance was. Like Faerun high fantasy kind of, and the fact that they were doing it for the first time, I think they felt like they had a lot more license to be as silly as they wanted to. And that's how you end up with stuff like Jenkins, I guess canonically, like, oh, a witch kissed him, and that's how he has one really stinky hand. Yeah. That's canon, baby. That's, like, real. Nothing like that would appear in this
No, definitely arc, I don't not. Think. Yeah, and I'm kind of sad about that. Well, because, you know, like, the really silly bits are, like, what people cosplay, and it's just really fun to have little Easter eggs in fanon. But, you know, like, the narrative that they're building now, more that it's, like, rooted in one step closer to reality.
Yeah. I feel conflicted about it, too, because, like, on the one hand, I sympathize with Travis wanting to try to create some level of realism. But I also, those really silly bits in the Adventure Zone are, like, beloved scenes for me.
Yeah.
Or in Taz Balance, I mean.
This is still the Adventure Zone, but it's just a different flavor.
Yeah, you knew what I meant.
Yeah.
And listeners, you knew what I meant, right?
Definitely.
I don't know if there's anything else I wanted to say that was exactly about the setup episode, except that, there's one huge thing. When fucking Griffin said he was making a werewolf and that he's a hunky teen named Jacob, I had to, like, pause the thing and, like, put my head down and, like, try not to...
You had to pause your thing?
Yeah.
Pause.
I don't get it.
Pause. Like, pause.
Oh, god damn it, Chelsea. Oh, man.
You're welcome.
That one was pretty good. But yeah, anyway, I almost lost my goddamn shit. And I was so disappointed when he said he was kidding because, like, I mean, I know it's dumb, but that's the kind of trope that I feel like the really cliche tropes with vampire and werewolf fiction would be something that Griffin would have a lot of fun playing with.
Oh, man, yeah.
And so for a second, I was like, Griffin's going to play hunky teen werewolf. That's going to be fucking hilarious. and we didn't get that. And that's okay, because instead we have Captain Werewolf.
Captain Werewolf. Oh. Well, okay, hold on. On that note, let's talk a little bit about Errol.
Okay.
My one note about Errol is that most of his useful skill bonuses are within his neighborhood. But in this world that Travis has built, I don't know that we're ever going to go to his neighborhood.
It's like Magnus having...
Yeah, like...
Rusting hospitality.
See, but that was just one skill that ultimately, like, it didn't really affect Magnus a whole lot.
Yeah,
but like,
true.
So much of Errol's skill set and so much of his, like, perks are because he's in his place. But because he's specifically not in his place, I'm kind of wondering how useful he's really going to be. I can't really tell. But that's just kind of my one call out is, like, how... Because everyone's skills seem to be useful independent of anything that's going on around them. But Errol, I guess, is going to be a little bit more on his own. But we saw, like, he used one of his skills to, like, hunt down clues or sniff them out and stuff. So...
Yeah, it might get a little clunky. And that's the kind of thing that, like, you play a couple sessions and then you say, okay, I want to use the revised ranger rules. Or, I'm going to... double class as a rogue because fighters are boring. Like, there's some things. There's actually, this is really interesting. Everyone listening, I'm sorry that we talk about D&D all the time, even though they're not even playing D&D anymore. But, like, that's my game, man. but what's really interesting is that, and I think it's fun to draw comparisons.
Oh, it is. Oh, it totally is.
Fucking 3 years.
We're bringing it up in context of the Adventure Zone. So, I mean, still related.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there's actually online really interesting statistics about player satisfaction by class.
Oh, I've seen this. I've seen this. Yeah. Yes.
So clerics. Oh, you have because you looked up for barbarian, huh?
No, but it it was linked in Team Shruggies before you joined Team Shruggies.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yep.
Yeah. But like cleric, rogue, and I think bard and fighter all have like really high class satisfaction, and then stuff like rangers satisfaction was incredibly low, some other ones too, I don't remember, I think maybe monk also.
Oof.
But it's just really interesting how, sorry any monk players if I got that wrong, but you know, they like wizards spend years and years testing this material, but it's so complex that it can come out and still be like not quite right, and they have to keep fine-tuning it. It's really fascinating.
Oh, it totally is. I think that's true of any like large-scale game, like even games like Overwatch or any
absolutely
of these...
video games too. Yeah,
yeah, like yep. these games are constantly growing and evolving, so and that's, you know, that's what expansion packs are for. That's why you pay extra money to, you know, make the game more fun. So
really cool.
Yeah, but I appreciate it.
Me too. the last thing I wanted to mention from the setup episode was that I loved Travis's outro and his Westy accent that he's been using.
Oh,
and like
the
music helped too to make that like sound really tense, but like that and like just kind of the job he's been doing overall so far, he's really stepped it up since Taz Nights, man. He's doing a good job. I'm into it.
Oh, okay. I still haven't listened to Taz Nights.
I know you haven't.
Well, it's almost Max Fun Drive time.
Oh, that's
so
true.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Then I'll give you my monthly reminder that you need to become a donor so you can listen to Taz Nights.
I look forward to, I listen to at least like 3 different Max Fun podcasts some of, not all of them, not all of them are McElroy products, but I mean,
that's true.
Yes, I look forward to whatever shenanigans are going to happen, and I hope that all of my podcasts like talk to each other and like play. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. yeah, so back on to episode one. Yes. Anything that we didn't already mention?
Percival.
Oh, it's our...
Oh, go ahead.
Percival.
Yeah. I really quick wanted to talk about Percival in the frame of reference of this episode, but also his mechanics as a ghost character. I wasn't expecting a ghost character, like, at all. I also wasn't expecting the southern drawl, but I love it.
It was really, yeah, yeah.
But I really dig the mechanics of Percival and how he gets to choose, like, I'm going to be heard and you can feel me, but you can't see me, you know? Like,
that stuff's really neat, yeah. That's
super cool.
I wasn't expecting a ghost. And honestly, when they started off the episode, the setup episode, going like, this is basically going to be vampires versus werewolves, I was so excited. But then nobody played a vampire. Yeah. And I'm sorry, but I'm a sucker for these stupid, like, paranormal monster tropes. I wanted someone to play a vampire really bad.
You're a sucker for the blood.
Oh,
sucker.
God damn it! Oh, man. Listen, I don't make puns on purpose. My mind doesn't think that way. So if you ever hear me making one, I promise it was not intentional. God damn it. I really liked Michael, the archangel.
Which one? I was about to say, which one?
Okay, wait. God, I have so many thoughts from that question. Because... first of all, I love that the fucking doll's name is Uncle Oni. I can't believe it. That's hilarious. And, okay, so Archangel Michael, I thought that character was really fun. I like how he was described as broad and, frankly, beautiful.
Yeah.
And I actually had a funny, like, kind of gut feeling about something, which was that, I might be totally off the mark on this, but, like, when Travis described Michael as like a beautiful dude and then right after said he was like covered in blood, and then Griffin said something like, oh, when they're covered in blood, that's one of my turnoffs. I wonder, is he trying to play Errol as a gay dude and like implying like, oh, I'm not attracted to Michael because the blood's not doing it for me?
I don't recall if that was in character or not.
Oh God, maybe it wasn't. Well, I thought he meant like that's how Errol felt. I might be like totally wrong about this.
Well,
actually,
yeah. I don't recall if they established anything about anyone's sexuality or anything. But I, at least in that instance, I don't recall also if that was in character. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
and I mean, like with Aubrey, they didn't like Travis didn't say like, by the way, I'm playing Aubrey as a lesbian. He said, it just came up when mm-hmm. he was like, Griffin, you gotta tell me whether or not Danny's cute, because it's gonna change how Aubrey acts.
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious about this. Now that I've got the idea in my head, I was thinking about, like, can you fucking imagine, like, Griffin's character dating Death after Justin's character dated Death in Taz Balance?
One of my notes is, I want to see a, like, somebody do some kind of, like, four coma comic or something about Michael and Kravitz walking into a bar.
Yes! Oh, man. I really liked how Gandy was like, okay, I'm going to take a sample of this stuff back to my lab. Like, she's such a cute character.
She is.
I mean, she didn't say it like that. But I really like her. I really like how Clint's playing her. It was fun to see Clint finally playing a girl. That's cool.
Yeah, huh? We kind of got to see him do like a girl character in Commitment when he was playing Space Case.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And that's the kind of vibes I was getting from Gandy, is I was totally getting Space Case vibe. I cannot think of her name. But
you mean Space Cadet?
Space Cadet. God.
Okay. Do you think?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Mine is just a very small question. Is I can't really imagine what the Sanctum Sanctorum is. I don't know what it's. Is it like a traveling wagon?
They said. Hang on. I'm gonna do a little Google right here. But he said it was a Black Mariah.
I don't know what that is.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, I think it's a car. Oh, it's also a comic, apparently. Huh. Am I making that up? Was it not Black Mariah? I'm mostly getting pictures of, like, Mariah Carey. Because Mariah Carr is in Mariah Carey, so I can't hang on.
Oh, my God.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, it's like, you know, in like old timey things, uh-huh. when like the police car comes,
oh, like a paddy like wagon,
big,
oh.
yeah,
they,
yeah,
okay, 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 yeah, exactly. They, okay,
so it's like
all right.
a big black car, but then it has the long back where you like throw the criminals in.
Oh, so it's is that their like mystery machine? Is that?
Oh my God! Yeah,
do they just?
It absolutely is.
Okay. Okay. All right. And so that's something that they also didn't establish yet is how do they all know each other? And I think that's kind of the crux of the beginning of every like role playing anything is, well, do these characters know each other already or are they meeting now for the first time? And this is like the first arc, I think. Like I'm pretty sure this is the first arc from them. And you might have to correct me considering Taz Knights, but this is the first one where we're diving in and they already kind of know each other and like they're established
Amnesty.
Already.
What about
as a
Amnesty?
Team. Sorry, say again?
What about Amnesty?
Amnesty, they didn't. Well, I guess Duck and. Duck and.
Yeah, Duck
Ted,
and.
Ned. Ned.
Duck and Ned knew each other.
Yeah, but not Aubrey.
And Duck had like arrested Aubrey.
Oh, yeah, I guess they had like some. Yeah, that's
so
true.
So they had some history.
Yeah, yeah.
In commitment, they didn't know each other at all.
No.
In Balance, they did the prequel episode. So, like, technically, the barest minimum, they started off having, like, already known each other a little.
Yeah, yeah. But this one, they didn't even, like, it wasn't even discussed, at least not on air, of whether or not they met each other or how they knew each other. It was just like, well, we are all here together because we all work.
Yeah.
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 They all work for the same, I guess, is it a detective agency or something? They were hired as arbitrators. arbiters. Arbiters. Which are people who, like, mediate? They negotiate? They talk a lot?
Yeah, I don't know. The lore of this world has not fully, like, rooted itself in my mind yet.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I put a note here of that there were so many characters and so many, like, details and locations.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
bloodlines and factions. Yep. I was struggling to keep up. But, and so when Travis was like, y'all are going to want to take notes, I was like, oh.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think actually that might be my one complaint.
Yeah.
And this is something like during the setup episode when he was delivering his cool monologue, I was like, damn, this is cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to absorb any of this,
no.
though.
Yeah.
And like at the beginning of this episode, too, there was just kind of like an info dump part.
Yeah. Which, I mean,
I still.
Yeah, I get that it has to happen, like, for context and stuff, but I would kind of rather learn about that kind of stuff in fiction. Because I don't understand what you're saying because I don't know.
Yeah, the problem is they don't have enough time. And so I think just the way this is designed, like, Trav just needs to get it out one way or another real quick.
Yeah, but okay, so that's the thing. If they have 8 hours until the whole town wakes up, is this going to be 8 hours long? Like, are we going to have 2 months of this arc? Which is great if we do, but I'm curious if that's what the plan is.
Probably not 2 real time hours, or sorry, probably not 8 real time hours.
Mm, yeah,
is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I can envision them, cause I don't. They might have said this on air, but he said that each hour is like you get beats or certain amounts of like certain.
Yes.
Yeah, which is also cool.
I
like the way they're doing this.
They did two this week, right?
Yes,
because they did. Yeah, so that's like 2 hours. So they've done 2 hours in one episode.
Well, I don't know that one beat is 1 hour.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of got a little bit confused on. Maybe I'll try.
Well, also, like, they're also like hand. They're not narrating walking around town from place to place. They're
yeah.
like fast traveling from location to location. So that actually, like, would, if it was real time, they would have to, like, go, okay, we're walking there for, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if they were actually, like, you know, keeping track a minute by minute of where they are. Yeah,
that would be nuts. Okay, I'm going to stop at the privy now. Which they've established that they want to do. That one part where Aubrey, like, went to go take a shit was the best, honestly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Travis.
You know, that's something maybe that I really do like about Amnesty and Dust is that they happen in a kind of a set time frame. I think something that kind of tripped us up about Commitment is that we couldn't tell what was happening, like, chronologically. Like, they got there, there was a party, they went to sleep, I guess? Then the next day, they went to a doctor's appointment, and then something, and then the next day after that, they got their powers, and then I guess they went to sleep again? Like, we couldn't really tell what was happening in the fiction, but Amnesty did a pretty good job of, like, establishing, like, this is the time of day, this is how much time has passed now that we're starting again. Like, I appreciated that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
All right, is there anything else you wanted to say about our new arc? How do you like it?
Oh, I love it.
I like it too.
I dig it. I dig it a lot. I definitely need to listen to it again. Just because prior to recording this episode, I had only fresh in my mind. I just finished watching it or listening to it like a mere 5 minutes before we actually sat down to record this thing.
You're getting this live, folks.
So I think I do need to listen to it again just so I can get a better feel of what the universe is, who the characters are. But I like what they're dishing out. And I have to send you the fan art that I've been seeing on Twitter and on Facebook, just because people's, like, headcanons for this arc, spot on. I'm more especially...
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see everyone's art after this episode. Now that we have, like, more details about Uncle Ani and...
Such a good name.
It's a super good name. And, like, I'm looking forward to people, like, you know, maybe animating a couple of these things.
Yeah.
I think that's it for me. Do you have anything else?
Nope. That's it for me, too.
All right, Rachel, where can people find us?
Okay, well, if you want to get in contact with us, you can send an email to taztalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send us an ask on taztalk.tumblr.com.
Great, and if you wanted to tweet at us, we are on the Twitter. We are at taztalkpodcast on Twitter.
Cool, I think all that's right. It. Okay, Dust number one. One down, three or four to go. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
Four to eight to go?
No, four to eight to go. I think that's pretty accurate, though, not going to lie.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Oh my God.
While the headlights on the highway.